Social Selling in a World Dominated by AI with today's special guest, Tim Hughes, on today's episode.
Today's episode is brought to you by Pro Writing Aid. Every word I write needs to be perfect. One typo in an email and I get dozens of replies pointing it out and saying, I thought you were an author. That's why I trust Pro Writing Aid. I have every plugin and feature they offer to check my blog posts and when I'm writing offline. No other tool even comes close. Score a lifetime license at servemaster.com/Pro Writing Aid.
Are you tired of dealing with your boss? Do you feel underpaid and underappreciated? If you want to make it online, fire your boss, and start living your retirement dreams now, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Artificial Intelligence Podcast, where you will learn how to use artificial intelligence to open new revenue streams and make money while you sleep. Presented live from a tropical island in the South Pacific by best-selling author Jonathan Green. Now, here's your host. Now, this is a topic near and dear to my heart because I've always been someone who's hated social media. But in the past year, I've started to experience really big growth on three of my channels. After 10 years of saying, I'm an email guy, I'm never going to change, SEO, blog post, email, and now most of my audience growth, about 90% of my growth for the past 3 months has been through social media. So I'm really interested in just how you got started and how you got passionate about social selling and really what exactly that means for people that are like, what think of social selling as network selling, which isn't quite the same thing.
Thank you for having me on, Jonathan, and inviting me to your podcast. So myself, I've been in sales for 25 years. I've been on social media for 15 years. And what I did was that back in 2016, I read a book on social selling, which was using the experience that I had, which was selling on social. Now, the problem is that most people think that social selling is about selling on social, which so when you get these spam connection requests and stuff like that, people think that's social selling. It's not. It's spam connection requests. So we have a definition. We've created a methodology, which is certified by the Institute of Sales Professionals. And our definition of social selling is using your presence and behavior on social media to build influence, make connections, grow relationships and trust, which lead to conversational and commercial interaction. The thing about social media, it's an ability to have a conversation and conversations create sales. So if we take LinkedIn, for example, LinkedIn is the biggest networking event that there is in the world. And what happens is that people come along and think that they can shout from the using a megaphone and people will buy from them. And it doesn't work like that. And the same with AI. What people have been able to do is that they've been able to automate things. But what we've learned over the 2 years of COVID is that actually people crave humans. And the saying people buy people is even more applicable. So people are looking for people. And all of the research shows on social media that they're not looking for spam. They're not looking for brochures. They're looking for people to have conversations with.
Yeah, I think that the same things that are annoying in person, and we forget like our social graces. Like I remember the first time I went to a networking event in person, and there are people that go around the room, just give everyone their business card. Before they even say hello, they just shove it in your face, even if you don't want it. And I remember this is how I learned to network is by writing. I just made a list of everything I didn't like when other people did it. If it made me feel bad, I go, I'm never doing that. And that was one of the ones that drove me crazy. And some people go around and leave their business card on every placemat in the restaurant before anyone gets there. And I always thought that doesn't make me think the card is special, right? It makes me think it's worth nothing because you're just throwing them out of an airplane. Yep. So I feel like a lot of people are doing the exact same socially inappropriate strategy online, and there's not as much social punishment, if you will. You don't have people throwing you out of the event as often or saying, what are you doing? There's not as much pushback, so people continue to do it. And I certainly get, as you can imagine, it doesn't matter the size of your podcast. The second you launch a podcast, you start to get 10 requests a day that all use the exact same template and the same software. Yep. And it's always, oh, I know someone who'd be a great guest for your podcast. It just happens to be my boss. And it's so uncomfortable, right? It's the most uncomfortable thing. But they just, and it always has the same 5 bullet points that have the same structure because it's the same template with the same similar accomplishments. And it just, I don't even read them. Because it's
I think what you say, Jonathan, though, is that things haven't changed. If you take any form of interruption marketing, whether it's cold calling or email, cold calling started in the 1980s. Email marketing started in the 1990s. And what it's there to do is that I will interrupt you and I will pitch. And the moment that you do that, you're pushing the responsibility or the control you have onto the other person. So as soon as you basically, if anybody, whether it's on LinkedIn or whatever, if they come and pitch, they're basically putting the responsibility on you to say yes or no. And if you say no, they're out. They're out the game. And that's why the difference between a pitch and a conversation is where, if you think about a networking event, you go up to somebody and say, "Hi, Jonathan, not seen you before. Have you traveled far? Did you get stuck in the traffic?" And you say, "Oh, I don't really like the coffee. No, I'm a tea person." And you have this conversation. And a conversation is very different from someone coming up to you and saying, "Buy my product because we're great," which is what everybody does online.
Yeah, it really resonates with me as someone who just receives. It's funny because I'm a marketer, but I receive so much marketing that drives me crazy.
Yeah.
And that really affects my messaging strategy. But there's this pressure we feel as marketers, that the pressure you feel as a marketer, like you have to be on every social network. You have to post massive quantities. And there's all of these people who teach this, right? The teachers of the teachers at the top of the pyramid who say, "Oh, the best strategy is to post 10 videos a day on each social network. And you have to post at different times. They all have to be different content." And it puts this massive pressure on you to perform. And I find it interesting. A lot of people right now are going through a season where a lot of YouTubers are quitting. They're like, "It's so hard to make one video a week." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" Driving, feeling the pressure that you have to make 10 TikToks a day and then tell me how hard it is to make one video a week when you have a giant production team. So I always think about that, but I think that's where, and it's an artificial pressure. Do you think you have to be everywhere? You have to do everything. And it's usually someone who gives the worst advice that starts with. I feel like that's where some of the seed comes from. And this idea that like the answer to a bad marketing message is quantity. If you just tell enough people, some of them will fall for whatever the message is. And exactly, like cold calling, then cold emailing, and then social media bots. There were like spam bots that were DMing me on AOL in the 1990s.
Yeah.
Right? Back before we even had digital cameras, it was like people are always the first thing, as soon as there's new technology, one of the first thing to do is, how can we use this to annoy people more?
So
how can we send people SMSs uninvited to message them? So this type of marketing comes from, I think, from that mindset of, "Oh, I have to do quantity because I don't know how to do quality." And it's, I guess it's a shortcut, but now with the advent of AI, more people have access to this accelerator, right? In the past, you'd have to be able to afford like expensive servers, or you'd have to have people in a cold calling room. Now you can just use AI. So I think now there's more people that have access to this ability to send out mass unwanted messages.
But the thing is that more people have access to average. What AI gives you is average. It doesn't give you good. And that's the difference. Is that if I go to ChatGPT and ask it to create some keywords, it's exactly the same keywords it's going to create for you. So it doesn't give me a competitive advantage. And I just hope, and it is a big hope, that when Google says that they will detune or downgrade or whatever the technical term is for content which they know has been created by AI, that they actually do that. And at the end of the day, we should be creating insightful content that people want to read, not a massive content. And hopefully within 6 months or so, we will actually have data. I have data from a university that shows that the quality of applications to a university have actually got, the quality has gone down, because what people are doing is they're using AI to do it. And what it does is it creates an average mark rather than actually someone who's outstanding. So a clever person may say, "I'll use ChatGPT because it's going to be a shortcut." But we always know with shortcuts, they don't work.
So would you say that what it actually does is flatten the bell curve? So it brings the bottom people up to the middle and the top people down to the middle?
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. Yeah. So if you're rubbish right now, it takes you up to be average. It's great because it takes you up to be average. But if you're really good and you think that this is a good strategy, then it basically takes you down, because it takes you down to there's a common denominator of average. Where AI should be helping you is, for example, we run a number of podcasts. We put the podcasts into AI, which everybody who runs a podcast probably does, and it creates a summary. Okay, so pretty much everybody does that. So you can do with that summary, you can put it out as a newsletter or whatever. One of my team put that into ChatGPT and said, "I want you to create a 2-minute segment of a sarcastic newsreader. And what he did was he then read the news, he put that into a teleprompter, and he read that as a news story, as a sarcastic newsreader. Now, that's new. That's not something that you could have done without AI. We would never have sat down and said, let's take this podcast and change it and then turn it into the... It's very simple. Now, he did it for 3 months and then stopped. But it was just an example of where AI is about creating something new and creating something that you wouldn't have time for. And so that's just an example of where we've used AI, where you just wouldn't have done that sort of thing without it.
Yeah, I think that you always have to have a you component. So either you write the first draft or you write the second draft. So I can almost always tell in the first sentence if something's written by AI, because AI has an accent, is the best way to say it, where there are certain phrases it uses that normal people don't use, like digital landscape and digital era and pondering. Nobody says those words. And yet I suddenly see 8 out of 10 social media posts, especially my LinkedIn feed, which makes me crazy. I find it really hard on LinkedIn to find anyone to reply to, because replying to an AI comment doesn't feel good. It feels like you fell for it because the person didn't take the time to read it. So they don't care. So why would I take the time to reply? And I think the worst thing is if someone falls for it. Imagine you respond to someone's email and then they write back and they have no idea what you're talking about because they didn't write it. So you now are embarrassed. And what happens when you're embarrassed is it turns into rage. Like it turns into disdain. Like you become the enemy of the person because they've tricked you. We never want to feel like a fool. It's the worst thing you can do to a potential customer. It's a great way to create an enemy. It's like the absolute best way. If you're looking for a mortal enemy, it's a great start.
Yeah, it's spamming somebody or cold calling people is the best way to start an argument.
My gosh.
What I did a week was I took the sarcastic newsreader one step forward and basically put into ChatGPT. I used to take the spam email that I got, put that into ChatGPT and said, create a sarcastic, let me down lightly email. And I did that for a week. And it was great fun because I thought it was really funny. And then after about the fifth day, ChatGPT said, you shouldn't actually be responding to spam emails, don't you? So I thought, yeah, okay, ChatGPT, you're right. Wow.
Yeah. Giving you a little bit of wisdom. I like that.
So I've come across this guy's book, which is called Too Many Hats, Too Little Time by Michael J. Goldrich. I get no money from this. It's just that I've read it in it. So he's written the book, but what he's done is that he got ChatGPT. He loaded it into ChatGPT to edit it. So it's edited and copywritten through AI. So he's not used a human one to do it. There is a human that's actually written the book. I've read the book and it's very readable, but he self-published it and he's put it on Amazon. So if you think about it from that perspective, the barrier to entry for writing good books is got low. There again, you could say the barrier to entry for publishing bad books is got low as well.
Yeah, I think that, as you mentioned, like I always tell people who are playing the Google SEO game with AI, Google has a much higher budget than you do for AI. What you can spend on AI trickery, it's nothing compared to what they can spend on AI detection. Do you know what I mean? Like when you think about the sword and the shield, what they have for defense is so much beyond. So you can, and here's a lesson I learned this recently for a person who was in charge of catching cheaters in World of Warcraft. And he says, we don't catch, as soon as we see someone cheating, we don't do anything. We wait 6 months. So we catch everyone who's using that trick all in one go. And that, I was like, because I used to think when you're playing a game and you're like, why are they letting the cheaters cheat? Now, because if they just catch the first person, then the cheaters will innovate. And you have to then catch the next trick. But if you wait 6 months, all the people who want to cheat will get caught doing it. And you can do a sweep or a purge. We've seen that before, where Amazon has done a purge and a bunch of books and authors are out of business and banned for life. We've seen it on other platforms, and Google has certainly banned websites for life and accounts get deleted. So I think we're in that phase right now where everyone's, I'm getting away with it. And it's pretty unlikely that you've outsmarted the largest company in the world, right? Like you fooled Apple, Facebook, and Google. Like I feel like they're much better at fooling us. So we're in that phase where I have a feeling there will be a purge sometime this year. And I think that it's going to happen on social media networks as well. certainly this can happen on Facebook. Facebook just announced that they're going to start tagging AI-generated content. Now, right now, they're just going to mark content made by their AI tools. And I was like, how many people are using your AI tools? I make my images in Midjourney. But eventually, I'm sure they'll catch them all.
I've just read an announcement just before coming on here that Nick Clegg basically said that they're going to get an industry-wide tag from all of the, they're going to go around all of the Midjourneys and basically, and it will be a tag which will be invisible to the creator. And then what will happen is that tag, so if you create it in Midjourney, that Facebook will be able to see that invisible thing and then be able to mark it.
It's interesting because I create all my images in AI, but I never intend for you to not be able to tell. If you see a picture of me in space marine armor shooting a spaceship down, I assume, right? Yeah. But I do know there are people creating content that's, and I think that's the line between entertainment and deception.
Yeah.
So I try to make it very clear. And the same thing with my content. Like people would assume if anyone's generating GPT content for other social media, they think it's me because I'm an AI person. It's no, the exact opposite. I'm someone, if it wasn't my job, I would never be on the computer. Like I don't like the internet at all. I'm an in-person on the beach with my kids kind of guy, which is so surprising to people, but it's my job. Your job is not, and eventually you want to do separate things. So I used to love the internet, but then it became my job. And now I want to do everything else. But I feel like AI can be so helpful. But I think that there's so many people that they've received a bad experience. Like I consult with a lot of companies here's what they want right now. They all want an AI customer service bot. And I say to every single one of them, have you ever had a positive experience with a customer service bot in your entire life? I've never met the person yet. And I said, will you give the AI bot the permission, the ability to give refunds? Nobody says yes to that, right? Nobody will trust an AI bot. I'm like, oh, you won't trust it with your money. That means that I know talking to it, that it can't solve my problem, right? If I have a broken something, I just had a microphone came in the mail today from Amazon and it was smashed. And I was like, if this thing is damaged, I got to send it back. If I have to talk to a bot, I know the bot can't solve my problem. I know it's a barrier, just like when you're talking to a phone tree and going 7, 9, 6. We all hate that. Nobody likes being on a phone tree. So the idea that, oh, I want to take a customer who's most likely upset and put in place a technology that they know for a fact can't solve their problem, which means the only possibility is it's going to make them more upset. You're not going to get less upset if you have to go through a gatekeeper to get to the person who can actually solve your problem. So, and I think that's the problem is people are putting AI to use in the wrong places, in their sales funnels, in their systems. They're not thinking about the customer experience. They're just thinking about, we can save money on customer support team. And I'm like, well, what does it cost you in enemies? Because we all know the person who gets upset enough and then they post negative reviews on every platform and it turns into 20 negative reviews and then they tell everyone and it creates an army.
There was a thing on LinkedIn recently about someone who put a process together about how you can take your spam messages, put them through GPT, and they kept spam messages at the other end. Of course, what sold, and I'm doing inverted commas with my fingers, is personalization. But of course, if you then send an email to me, it doesn't matter how personalized it is, but if you send it to me saying, Dear Carol, it's not personalized at all. And because my name's Tim, and whatever you're doing, if you're taking spam, you're putting it through ChatGPT and and it's spam, it's still spam. And it's like polishing a turd. You can polish it as much as you want, but it's still a turd.
Yeah, I get those messages from people that always, who say, oh, the same one. Oh, I think I'd be amazing at your podcast. My favorite episode happens to be, and it's always whatever the last episode uploaded was. I'm like, oh, what a coincidence. Everyone always loves the latest episode. It means I'm constantly getting better. It means this episode is better than every episode I've done before this, but next week's will be better than this one. And it's like,
When I do it, I scroll down. You've got to have a bit of intelligence to scroll down a bit and say, like the third one or the fourth one. Come on, everybody. Come on.
Yeah, but see, they never think of doing that. My favorite, one of my friends got one this week where they forgot to fill in the blank and it said, insert name of the most recent podcast episode. And I said, that's amazing because you get to choose. I said, you get to choose what your favorite episode is. That's amazing. It's like a choose your own adventure. But it's exactly that. And now there's AI tools that like you can send a video and it inserts a different person's name. I hate that because that's deception. That to me, that's the other line of it. If you don't have time to say my name, it's fine. Like I sometimes get those videos where someone says, hey, I made a personal video for you and they send you the link and the link has 200 views and it was uploaded a year ago. Because like, you're...
I've never looked at that. I actually don't. I interviewed on my podcast, I interviewed a cybersecurity guy and he said never click on links. I never click on any links. So people can send me videos till they're blue in the face, but I never watch them. I always think they're a bit creepy anyway. Anything that... you don't know me. Why are you talking as if you know me?
It's okay, from people I actually know. No, not from a stranger. From someone I actually know. And that's why it's more upsetting. But one time, someone I know actually sent one and he said my name and he was actually talking to me directly. I was so shocked. I've never gotten one of those authentic before. I still think... It was 2 years ago. I still think about the one time I got an authentic email. Like, that's how rare they are. That they shine. And it was just like a nice email because I'd done something small.
But the only reason why people are spamming is because people are stupid enough to respond. I'm trying to think of something that was where people, they were doing something and then they all, and then the spam stopped, where people clearly were not responding. But one of my team basically went to somebody and they reckoned that they were getting a 3-4% response rate from spamming people on LinkedIn, which if you think you're getting probably a 1-2% on cold calling is actually 100% right. Increase on cold calling. So it works. But those ones that I get, those creepy ones that I get from people that go, my boss wants to talk to you about a job in Shanghai or something like that. They're strange. I don't understand what their motivation is at all. It's like really weird.
I always assume organ harvesting. It's interesting because once you start to grow, like I've just started experiencing growth the last 3 months because I've just gotten really active on LinkedIn and you start to get a lot of weird. Like when I started off an SEO agency in 2010, I would start to grow a client's website and they would immediately, as soon as they started getting some traction, start getting phone calls from AT&T and for all these other large companies that were pretending they had SEO teams. And I was like, the reason they're calling you is because what I'm doing is working. They never called you before. So they wait until you're already succeeding to then go, hey, we can help you succeed more. And yeah, it is really strange. A lot of people pay to send me one of those in messages, whatever they're called, the paid version.
They were quite, in mails, expensive.
No, that's what shocks me. I'm like, man, you have wasted your money. And it's not that hard to get a conversation with me. It's like, I'm not a beautiful woman, so I'm not getting 500,000 comments a day, but the effort people put in is so low. Now, when people put in any effort, I tend to respond. If they put in any effort, they've actually listened to my podcast, because I do get a super fan sometimes. I do get someone who they've listened to all my episodes. They name out 3 different things from 3 different episodes that they liked, and they're really specific. And like, I'll talk to them.
I do as well. It's humbling.
Yeah. And it's not, I always wrote about this, like when people always say, how do you meet really wealthy guys? They said, when's the last time you ever heard a guy get a compliment? Or anyone, when's the last time anyone bought you a drink? Nobody buys a man a drink. So it doesn't matter how successful you are. If you walk up to a billionaire and go, hey, can I buy you a drink? And like, oh my gosh, no one's ever nice to me. Like, it's amazing how small, the barrier is so much lower than we think because it never happens. No one compliments us. No one gives us stuff. It's like a little bit of kindness without an expectation and people will talk to you.
So what we started running a benchmark, it's 13 months ago now. And we took a team of cold callers and we retrained them in our social selling methodology. And on average, they're now getting 10 meetings a week. And the good ones are getting 25. Now that's exponential change. Now we're not using any sales tech, so you can throw that all away. All we're doing is that you need professional edition of LinkedIn because you need to be able to send the connection requests. But having a conversation, if you're going to it in terms of saying, I'm having a conversation and approaching it. It's not about me. It's not about me and my product. And I want to sell you something, Jonathan. It's about, Jonathan, you look interesting. I've seen you. And everybody loves a piece of flattery. And if you go about it in the way of having a conversation, maybe even use a bit of humor, which is going back to the fact that we need to be human, then actually you can easily get 10 meetings a week. And that's what we do in terms of a measurement, in terms of our social selling methodology. It is possible.
Yeah, that's really interesting because most of the time when people are pitching me, I can tell they don't know who I am because usually they'll reach out to me like, hey, you know what would really help your business is creating products. I was like, that's literally the thing I'm most well known for. I've been ghost creating products and worked with some of the biggest brands in the world. That's how I got my start online is people. I made products for a bunch of companies. I've made over 100 products. That's what I'm most well known for. And you literally go, hey, we can teach you how to do the thing. So you're already most well known for. I'm like, you didn't read any of my, you didn't read my about me. You didn't do, read the, you didn't read the back cover of my book. Like you didn't do level one research. And they always pitch things that are the things I'm already good at. And
but because they're working to a script. And this is the thing that we're going back to the human element of this is that you can use scripts when you're contacting certain people. But the key thing is still about them. It's not about you. Because the problem is that everybody goes to market the same way, which is I'm really excited about my products and services. And therefore, I'm going to tell you about it. And you're going to be really excited too. And of course, you don't give a shit. Because you'd prefer to be on the beach with your kids.
Yeah. People always say to me, how do you get clients? My website, because I do ghostwriting. I'm a well-known ghostwriter. People go, how do you get clients? My website doesn't mention it. It's not listed anywhere on my website. I don't send outreach. It's not even on my LinkedIn profile. And maybe it is. Maybe the sentence is there somewhere. But the number one way people hire me is they send me a message and go, hey, do you still do ghostwriting? Like that's the first message. That's how high my barrier is. So I did change my messaging last year to let people know that it does exist. But that's as far as I've gotten. Like I don't have a website around it. And it creates an area of mystique. But if you're really good, people will find you. Like you don't have to pitch. You can just be, I'm really good at this. And the rest of it falls into place because people want to work with people they like. The whole reason I became an entrepreneur, and this is something I know, every single person who works somewhere has someone in the office they hate. Everyone at every job, everywhere has someone at the office they do not like. I certainly did. On every job I've ever had, there's been someone or more than someone I didn't like. And so when you work for yourself, your final dream is I can finally only work with people I like.
Yes.
And it's amazing how much that makes a difference over expertise, over anything else. The biggest projects will come your way and people say, well, how do you be likable? And you already said it. Start by caring about the other person. Start by actually doing the level of research that you would want someone to do before they reach out to you. And it falls into place. So I think this has been really cool for people to see that you can use AI as an accelerant, not a replacement. That's the critical element. You can use it to make you a little bit better, to help you be more organized, to help you be more creative. The mistake is when you try to replace yourself or use it to switch to the shotgun approach. That's where things start to fall apart. So this has been awesome. You've given us, we've already gone a little bit over time, but I was just having so much fun. Where's the best place for people to connect to you, to follow you, see the things you're doing? Is it LinkedIn? Because I know you're just killing it on there.
Yes, the best place to find me is LinkedIn. I'm Timothy or Tim Hughes on LinkedIn. There's also my book, which is Social Selling Techniques.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Starting with AI can be scary. ChatGPT Profits is not only a bestseller, but also the missing instruction manual to make mastering ChatGPT a breeze. Bypass the hard stuff and get straight to success with ChatGPT Profits. As always, I would love for you to support the show by paying full price on Amazon, but you can get it absolutely free for a limited time at artificialintelligencepod.com/gift.
To influence buyers and change makers, the second edition, which is the one with the yellow cover, and that's available on Amazon worldwide.
And I'm going to link to both of those in the show notes below the video, everywhere else, so everyone else can see this. Thank you so much for being here. This has been a really cool episode.
Thank you.
I had a really good time. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Starting with AI can be scary. ChatGPT Profits is not only a bestseller, but also the missing instruction manual to make mastering ChatGPT a breeze. Bypass the hard stuff and get straight to success with ChatGPT Profits. As always, I would love for you to support the show by paying full price on Amazon, but you can get it absolutely free for a limited time at artificialintelligencepod.com/gift. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Artificial Intelligence Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss another episode. We'll be back next Monday with more tips and tactics on how to leverage AI to escape that rat race. Head over to artificialintelligencepod.com now to see past episodes, leave a review, and check out all of our socials.